The relationship between place and food production is a pretty complicated one. There's all kinds of things about pride and identity tied up with it. So much so now that, of course, we're not allowed to bandy terminology around willy-nilly. Heaven forbid you refer to that bottle of local sparkling as champagne. But does it cut both ways? How realistic is the idea of wine aficionados the world over casually referring to a Barossa? Could the same apply to our foods? Dr. Jen Cleary has spent much time investigating the economic benefits of food provenance and geography. She's an adjunct associate professor at Canberra Uni's Institute for Governance and Policy Analysis. And Patrick Maguire is director of Sullivan's Cove Tasmanian Whiskies. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Now, Jen Cleary, why is it that Australian sparkling wines aren't allowed to be called champagne? Let's go to that kind of basic example and get to the bottom of it.
Okay, so Australia entered into a treaty with the European Union in order for us to be able to continue to sell our wines into Europe. We agreed that we would respect the geographical indications, as they're called, for European wines. There came a time around about 2008, I think it was, that we finally agreed that we would no longer call our sparkling wines champagne because they don't come from Champagne in France.
So that's the most kind of well-known example of it, but it applies more widely. We talk about it in terms of geographic indicators. What are some other ones people might be familiar with?
The other ones that people might be familiar with, and these are European, for example, Parma ham, feta cheese from Greece, and there are a number of others. A slightly more unusual one is Melton Mowbray pies from England. The thing is that in Australia, though, we've only entered into legislation covering wine, so we can still call our cheese that we might export, we can still call it feta, for example, and we can do the same with other things as well, with other foods. So it's only for wine in Australia at this stage.
I was going to ask that with the example of feta, because we see feta with a modifier all the time. We see it referred to as Danish feta, which presumably denotes difference. But you can't have an Australian Chianti. Is this just the wine thing? Is that the problem?
At this stage, Australia has only entered into that agreement for wine. So we respect the European GIs for wine, but we are still able to use other terms for other products, non-wine products.
So what are Australian producers calling for? And why? How do they feel about these kind of delineations?
If you're a premium whiskey producer in Tasmania and you find that you produce a fantastic whiskey in Tasmania, and hypothetically, let's say you won the 2014 World Whiskey Prize for the world's best single malt, and suddenly everybody decides that, well, we should produce lots more whiskey in Tasmania. And you then might get what often happens in industry, that a number of new entrants might come into that market and start producing whiskey. And then you might get the situation where the wonderful brand that's been established around whiskey from Tasmania might start to get diluted by some, shall we say, not so high quality products that might come out of there. Of people, of course, wanting to cash in on that market, that demand.
Patrick, would Tasmanian whiskies benefit from having a GI?
Look, I think it would. And that's what we're working on at the moment. We've been talking to our state government and also to the federal government about this very thing. And both governments are very supportive of the idea. But it does take quite a while to work through this idea and to get our own recognised name. I think we've got a little way to go, but we're certainly working on it.
I'm a little baffled by why it needs a full kind of legislative response, though. I mean, can't you find ways to regulate that yourself? If a whiskey hasn't been made in Tasmania, surely calling it Tasmanian whiskey breaches some other trades practice thing anyway.
Well, yeah, it doesn't seem to. We've got a couple of associations. We've got the Australian Distillers Association, which is an association formed by a lot of the small boutique whiskey producers. And it's now beyond whiskey. It's rums, gins, brandies, whatever you like, but produced by small producers. We've also got the Tasmanian Whiskey Producers Association, which I'm the chairman of. Both associations are looking at all this, but none of us have the teeth. I mean, we're just an association of like-minded people working within a very small industry. We have no teeth to police these things. So to have some sort of government legislation to preside over this would probably be the way that we would need to go.
Patrick, the difference in the way whisky's made in different areas, though, is partly where that terminology thing comes from. People will ask for a Scotch or they'll ask for an Irish whisky. I mean, how much is what you're protecting a particular way of doing things and a particular kind of outcome?
Well, look, the way we produce our whiskies is very much the same as the Scots or the Irish. Some of us here are producing an Irish style of whisky. Most of us are producing a Scottish style of whisky and some American style of whisky. The method we use is pretty much the same, but the difference, I guess, is the raw materials we use. For instance, the barley or the rye or the wheat or whatever is generally grown in Tasmania. So it's very much a local thing. So that provides a little bit of difference. Also, because we're all small boutique producers, we have the luxury of being able to create each run separately, and it's a personal thing. So when we cut the heart of the run out, when we're doing a spirit run, that is a personal thing. We do it by the way it flows, tastes, smells, that sort of thing, rather than a regimented time frame, as some of the bigger ones do. So we can play with it more. We can have a bit more fun. We can age our barrels for a long time or a short time, depending on the size of the barrel we use. There's a whole lot of differences in what we do that gives us different qualities and different flavours. So that's part of the difference, but a whisky produced in Tasmania can't be called Scotch. I mean, Scotch is a Scottish whisky, so where that comes in.
I like that the Scots and the Irish, as a point of difference, debate whether to include an E in whisky or not. Maybe Tasmanian whisky shouldn't include the H. You should just do your own spelling. It's the only way to break free.
Yeah, look, in the early days when we first started producing whiskies here, I know a couple of us sat around and have a good old argument about that, or not an argument, but a good discussion about it. And we were trying to find a way to spell whisky differently. I guess we just gave up in the end and spelled it without the E.
Some things
but
have
maybe,
to stay pure.
Maybe without the H would have been the way to go.
Even more controversial. So, Jen, you recently co-authored a report into GIs in Australia. What did you find about this question of why there's a need for legislation?
GIs essentially are about intellectual property rights. So they're a public property right as opposed to being a privately owned instrument. GIs involving a place name are owned by everybody and nobody, if you like. And a wonderful example of why place matters, in a sense, if you're talking about produce, is, and Patrick certainly touched on it just then, there are characteristics of what is grown in a particular place, so it's terroir, if you like, that will affect the flavour and the characteristics of that product. Tasmania, they'll use their local products. They're also using some of the finest water in the world. They're using peat bogs that are probably incredibly ancient. So all of those things are going to contribute to the way that the products that they produce taste. For example, if you were to go into Harrods Food Hall in London, you'll see wines from the Old World and wines from the New World. And, of course, featuring strongly in wines from the New World are some of Australia's better-known brands. And then if you look at the spirits, they're not showing in Harrods as being Australian spirits. The whisky particularly is being shown as Tasmanian whisky. Now that I find is a really interesting point of difference. It's not just called Australian, it's called Tasmanian. So already there's a recognition that whisky from Tasmania has some special characteristic. And we also found the same thing with food. We interviewed a number of producers of goods. Some were trying to delineate their products as being high quality through various branding strategies, but for the most part, many were not.
I'm curious about the relationship between specificity and generality, and you pointing to Tasmanian being a kind of more precise geographic indicator than just Australian. But the example you gave earlier of feta, of course, a whole country can be seen as synonymous with a foodstuff. Are there things in Australia that you think geographic indicators would usefully apply to outside the wine or liquor?
Yeah, well, certainly there are some fruits. So mangoes from Mareeba, for example, they already have a reputation. But certainly, you know, they have some characteristics, it's said, that actually distinguish them from others. But Australian producers are not necessarily benefiting from those differences because we're not actually branding them in that provenance way that actually brings out that difference. And there are some quite unique Australian cheeses, for example. We're using some of the European names for those, whereas there may be a case for distinguishing them. And where that becomes important is when you consider the free trade agreements that Australia's recently entered into and, you know, the protection of our quality in those international markets is really a key concern, I think. And the big question for me was, well, how might regional producers actually benefit from having an extra tool in the toolkit with which to help extract more value at the farm gate?
What did you conclude? Because I agree. I mean, that is the question. What's needed? You know, is it legislation and are we likely to see it?
There is a case for benefits to be gained for regional producers in Australia from having the added tool of geographical indications. And the only way that we can have those is via legislation. So at the moment, people can use things like a certification trademark, in which case they can set particular criteria around quality or production regimes, and they can apply that certification mark to their products. We didn't see a lot of that. What we saw, where we did see it, we saw that people would be enthusiastic to start with, but it usually took some local person who eventually ran out of steam. And something Patrick touched on before is the policing of that becomes quite difficult.
Thank you both so much for joining me. I've been speaking with Dr. Jen Cleary from Canberra University. She's also the co-chair of the International Rural Network. And Patrick Maguire from Sullivan's Cove Whiskies in Tasmania. That's Whiskies with an H for now. They won the Best Single Malt at the World Whiskies Award in 2014. And it's very hard to get your hands on a bottle. I'm Michael Williams, and you're listening to Blueprint for Living here on RN.